ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Bright Brains Podcast. Today, we have a special guest joining us. His name is Oliver Copeland. He is the mastermind behind the popular YouTube channel, Sleeve No Card Behind. That's a great name, by the way. Oliver is not just any Pokemon card collector. He's an expert in the field with an encyclopedic knowledge of the cards, their history, and their value. Through his channel, Oliver shares his passion for collecting, unboxing, and discussing all things Pokemon cards. He captivates audiences with his expertise and enthusiasm. Join us as we delve into the world of Pokemon card collecting with none other than Oliver Copeland. Welcome to the show, Oliver.
Thank you. Thanks for that introduction, man. That is awesome. Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for coming. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into collecting Pokemon.
Well, I'm a pretty average dude, 29 years old. I live in Canada with my wife and my two cats, and I collect a lot of Pokemon cards. I was born in 1994. Pokemon came to North America in 99. So as far back as I can remember, I really just was obsessed with Pokemon. And so I think the way I got into it was I didn't really have a choice. I entered the public school system in 99. And so I remember my first day of school, everyone was already obsessed with Pokemon. And, you know, it was my first time at school, and I already knew what Pokemon was. Everyone else knew what Pokemon was. So it was just natural that we bonded over it. Pretty much everyone in the school was obsessed with it back then.
Yeah, you know, I remember being at school when Pokemon first came out, and it was such a phenomenon. I haven't experienced anything else quite like that. You know, I remember it got so crazy that we weren't allowed to bring Pokemon cards to school or onto the bus, like the school bus. So if we had Pokemon cards on us, they would take them from us, like the bus driver. Sometimes you wouldn't get them back. You know, it was crazy, man. And we'll delve more into that. But so you said it debuted in 1999. What came first? Was it the cards, the game, or the anime?
So in Japan, the video game came first, Pokemon Red and Green version in Japan. Shortly after that, the anime came out, and then the cards. So it was the video games in 96, and then, well, the cards came out in 96 as well, but late 96, and I believe the anime debuted early 97, but I think we actually saw promos for the anime before the cards. That's kind of muddy water. In North America, though, we got everything all at once, pretty much in the span of just a few months. We got the video games, the TV show, and the cards. It was like a triple whammy for us.
Yeah. And what's crazy is, like, you know, with most fads, they kind of, you know, trickle off after a while, you know, but kids today are still collecting Pokemon. I just saw the YouTube influencer Jake Paul, or maybe it's Logan Paul. He just bought like a really expensive card. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I do. So, yeah. I mean, really expensive. That's a bit of an understatement. It was $5.2 million.
Woo. What card was it, and why was it so expensive?
That's a great question. So this card is called the Pokemon Illustrator, or sometimes Pikachu Illustrator. There are only 41 copies in existence. This card came out in 96. It was a 97, I believe. It was a sort of promotional card from Korokoro magazine. It was part of an illustration contest. So you would make an illustration, send it in, and the winners would get copies of this card. However, after almost 30 years, there aren't very many of them left. So while there were 41 made, only 39 distributed, we don't have all 41 of those anymore. Plenty of them have been lost due to, you know, whatever happened in the last 30 years. And so On top of that, the one Logan Paul purchased for $5.2 million was graded a PSA 10 gem mint, which means it's in absolute perfect condition, which is why the price is so high. So there's an extreme rarity with this card. It's very desirable. And the lore behind it really helps too, because this card has been sought after basically since it came into existence.
So you say graded. What do you mean by that?
So in the collectibles industry, you can have something authenticated and then graded by a third party. PSA is one of the big ones. It is the biggest third party grading service when it comes to trading cards. And this is actually much bigger in the sports card world. Sports cards, they really carry this industry, but as a secondary, Pokemon cards come into play here. You can send them into this third party and they will give it a grade from 1 to 10 based on not only its condition, but its quality from the manufacturer as well. And so for a card to be graded at 10, not only does it have to be in fantastic mint condition, which means over the past 30 years, it has no scratches or dents or anything like that, but it also has to be manufactured particularly well. That includes sharp corners, good centering, nicely cut edges, so on and so forth, void of any defects.
Have you had any cards graded?
I've had plenty graded, yeah.
Yeah. So what's the most expensive card that you own?
That's a good question. I get that from time to time. The short answer is I don't know. I have a lot of cards. My strategy when it comes to collecting isn't monetary based. I don't always go for the most expensive cards. I have a lot of cards in the $1 to $500 range because that's somewhere around my purchasing budget. So I tend to save up and buy a card in that range. I do have a handful of cards worth over $1,000, but I don't have anything extreme. I'm pretty frugal with my money. I haven't really left my comfort zone and spent a lot of money on a Pokemon card yet.
I understand. But do you like make a living by buying and selling cards, or is it just a hobby for you?
Well, right now I'm in sort of a funny place transitioning from a hobby to a small business. It's not buying and selling cards, but it's online media like my YouTube channel and my website. However, you can make a living buying and selling Pokemon cards. Plenty of people do it, and there's plenty of YouTube channels and or Instagram pages made by people who run businesses like this. It's really fascinating to me.
Yeah, it is fascinating, you know, just thinking that somebody, you know, this hobby that we all grew up with, you know, I was a kid opening up a booster pack I bought from Blockbuster, you know, a store that's no longer around, and just thinking that maybe some of those cards I had could have been worth something. I wish I had kept a hold of them. Unfortunately, I didn't. I think when I was a kid, I had my collection in my pocket and I threw my pants into the dirty laundry bin and my mom washed them and they all got, you know, degraded. They like deteriorated. And so that was it for me, you know, but I'm pretty sure you probably run into a lot of people who have stories like that, you know, saying, oh, I had this rare card, but I threw it out and things like that. So you've been collecting since you were a kid. Has it been continuously, or has it been, you stopped at one point and then got back into it? Or has it just been the whole time you've just been collecting your whole life?
It has been on and off for me. But before I want to get into that, I have to say the exact same thing happened to me, man. All of my cards, you know, I put together all of my best cards. I was trying to proposition my friend for a trade. And I put just, you know, all of my bangers together, snapped an elastic band around them, put them in my jeans. And next thing I know, my jeans were in the clean laundry pile with my soaked, destroyed Pokemon cards in there.
Oh, man. That's like the worst thing that could happen to a kid.
I recall I recall crying for days. I think I was about 9 years old. Everyone's got that story though, and everyone says, I wish I had my old cards. And everyone claims that they had a first edition Charizard, which can't be correct. But
yeah,
I have been collecting on and off. So I started, like I said, in maybe it was 2000, maybe it was 99, but around that time. And I was the target audience for Pokemon cards. They were released and marketed directly towards my age group. And so something interesting happened. And as I got a little bit older, maybe seventh or eighth grade, when I was around 13, maybe 12 to 14 years old, I became less interested in Pokemon, more interested in things like girls, for example. And yeah. Pokemon became something for kids, and it was no longer cool. And interestingly, looking back now, the cards that were produced by the Pokemon Company in this window of time where people my age weren't buying cards are now some of the rarest cards in the hobby because there is a low demand. Pokemon Company, perhaps they didn't plan for this, but once me and all my friends and my age group started putting Pokemon down, their sales dropped. And so the cards were produced a lot less. And of course, here we are when demand is at an all-time high. Those cards are at an all-time low in terms of supply. So right when I stopped collecting, everyone else stopped collecting. And those cards all of a sudden are very valuable again. But I did pick it up the same time as everyone else picked it back up in 2016 when Pokemon Go came out. That really revitalized the franchise and the trading cards. And then shortly after that, I think just a couple of years, Logan Paul made a thing of it on YouTube, opening a first edition booster box, which was a huge event. And then that was just before COVID started, and the rest is history. We saw the largest boom in Pokemon history there. So there is that window from when I decided that I was too old for Pokemon cards to around the release of Pokemon Go, where I wasn't collecting and a lot of people weren't collecting.
Yeah, Pokemon Go was wild. That's when it really hit me. Like when I saw everybody, like I would go to the park and there would just be hundreds of people out of all ages, adults to young kids, and with their phones out catching Pokemon. And I'm like, wow, like people still love this franchise. And what's interesting is I thought the Pokemon Go, the game, I thought it was just okay. Like I wish it, like I would have liked being able to battle, you know, with the Pokemon you catch. Like if the game was just like the Game Boy game, man, I would have been into it. But the thing is that even though it wasn't the greatest game, people were still into it. Like, you know, everyone I talked to at my job, like I was working at a call center and you have all types of people there, middle-aged, senior citizens, young people, and they're all talking about the Pokemon they caught. And I'm like, this is insane. I've never experienced anything like this. So my question is, why do you think what do you think is the secret behind Pokemon's enduring popularity? And why does it expand multiple generations?
That's a good question, and I've thought about this. I've reflected on this in the past, and I think that a big part of it is that it is marketed towards kids. And if you can really get kids obsessed with something, then they're either going to hold on to it for the rest of their lives, or they're not going to hold on to it. But those feelings of nostalgia are gonna stay with them for sure. So, and another factor I think that personally played a part for me is that Pokemon didn't insult you as a child. Mm-hmm. I look at other video games or toys or franchises of the late 90s or early 2000s, And most of them are simple and easy to understand with no barrier of entry and basically made for little kids. But Pokemon had depth to it. There's 151 different characters to learn, each with unique characteristics and attacks. And in addition to that, there's this advanced rock, paper, scissors system comprised of seven different types. And it's just way more complicated than any of its competition at the time. And as a six-year-old, that's what drew me in. It didn't feel like a kid's product. It felt like something much bigger than that. And that probably lends credence to why I'm 30 years old and still obsessed with it, because it's continued to grow and it's continued to not insult me as an adult now, who someone from the outside might think I'm playing with kids' toys. I sort of am, let's be honest. but again, it's that kind of I wasn't insulted as a kid, and now as an adult, the franchise isn't insulting me in any way. It still feels like something bigger than me, and I'm excited to learn more all the time. So I think the fact that they targeted us at the right time, at the right age, and stuck with us to the point where we have disposable income and a lot of us have children to pass this on to, it's a really, really good formula.
Yeah. You know, one thing I think why it became so popular is the main character, Ash Ketchum. He was like a 10-year-old kid, I think, in the cartoon, and which was interesting because he's 10 years old, but he just goes off on his own and travels the world. You know,
that's bonkers.
I'm not sure what kind of world they live in where 10-year-old kids can just leave, but that's what he did. And most 10-year-old kids would love to go off on an adventure like that and, you know, have these wild, exciting battles. Plus, Pikachu, the character, you know, which kind of has become the de facto mascot. I wonder, did they plan? Do you know if they like plan on Pikachu being the mascot, you know?
That's a good question. I think Pikachu was a product of what kids responded to. I may be wrong, but I believe it was Clefairy, a different Pokemon, who is, if you look back at the first issue or the first volume of the manga, I believe it was Clefairy who was Ash's sort of sidekick or mascot Pokemon. I'm not sure when it transitioned to Pikachu, but I can't imagine Pokemon without Pikachu being the mascot, you know?
Yeah, same here. And just the character of Pikachu, it's so perfect. I mean, you can see the balloon in the Thanksgiving Day parade. I remember seeing that, like, wow, like the video game and the card that I play has a float in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. I thought that was wild. But, you know, they really, you know, it's just a perfect marketing phenomenon. So my question is to you, what's your favorite Pokemon?
So this is tough. I don't think I have a favorite. I think the entire first generation, the first 151, are all my favorite. Mm-hmm. When it comes to collecting cards, I do have a Ho-Oh collection, which is the second generation. Ho-Oh is a bird-like Pokemon. It's a mix between sort of, I would say, a phoenix and a peacock. Its artwork is very rainbowy, and so it comes off, it really has some beautiful illustrations. So I think in terms of card collecting, Ho-Oh might be my favorite, but I really just like Pokemon in general.
Yeah, I would say my favorite is Hitmonlee, which was a generation one. It was like a kickboxing kind of Pokemon. I just like the name Hitmonlee. And that's another thing, like the names of these creatures are kind of clever, like a Bulbasaur or Charmander and, you know, so forth and so on, like Electabuzz, you know, they put a lot of thought into it. So, what is the most expensive card in existence? Is it the one that Logan Paul had bought, or is there another card that's the most expensive?
That's a good question because it's a little bit nuanced. Yes, currently Logan Paul's Pokemon Illustrator purchased at 5.2 million is the most expensive Pokemon card to be sold and purchased publicly. Now, there have been private transactions that unfortunately we don't know about, we don't know the details of, so there very well could be a larger sale somewhere out there. But beyond that, there's also Pokemon cards that are more rare than Logan Paul's Gem Mint 10 Pokemon Illustrator. And I call these phantom cards. They're cards that we sort of know about, but we haven't seen. And this is really interesting because they, in some cases, might not even exist. A good example here, actually, the best example is something called the pre-release Raichu. So the first Pokemon cards to come out, base set 1999, had 16 holo foil cards, and one of those was Raichu. And I'll get back to that in just a moment. In the Pokemon trading card game, there's something called a pre-release event. So this is when you would go out to your local card shop or local game store, and players get access to the cards about 2 weeks before they come out. And if you attend one of these events, you quite often get a pre-release promo card, which is really nothing special, you'd think. It's just a card with a small stamp on it that says pre-release. And so for the 1999 base set, the pre-release event had a Clefable pre-release card. So if you attended this event 2 weeks before Pokemon cards actually came out in North America, you would get this promotional card, a Clefable with the pre-release stamp. Now, as legend has it, when they were printing these Clefable cards in the factory in 1999, a few Raichus slipped through and got that pre-release stamp. I believe it was eight. But again, that is not verifiable. And so this was in 1999. And for the longest time, this was just a myth that there was even a pre-release Raichu card. And it became kind of a joke in the smaller groups of collectors. People are always asking about the pre-release Raichu, and then we'd roll our eyes and say, yeah, we don't even know if that's real or not. There's some images that surfaced, but how can you authenticate an image? Other than that, it's just folklore or tales from ex Wizards of the Coast employees, etc. Until this past October, just a few months ago, CGC, a grading service, graded not one, but two pre-release Raichu cards. So after all this time, almost 30 years, we finally got proof, verifiable proof, that this pre-release Raichu card actually exists. Not one, but two of them. So it was a very, very exciting moment for a lot of us. And there are maybe six more of them out there. We don't know. But until this moment, the pre-release Raichu was a phantom card. Now, the owner of these two Raichus has said that they are not for sale, but I'm guessing that they could possibly be the most expensive cards out there. And I don't think they got good grades. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they did not get a 10. If a pre-release Raichu were to surface and be authenticated and graded at a PSA 10, I'm almost certain that would pass the $5.2 million mark. And there's a few other cards like that floating around which may not even be real. They're just sort of myth. So yes, to answer your question, currently Logan Paul's Pokemon Illustrator is the highest selling Pokemon card, but there may be more expensive Pokemon cards out there. We're just waiting for the sale to happen.
Yeah, the lore around this whole franchise is pretty deep. Let me ask you this. When do you actually play the trading card game? Because I know growing up, nobody actually played the game, like the card game. People just collected them. But do you actually play the card game?
I don't. I mean, I do a little bit. There is an app on you can get on the Apple App Store, the Google Play Store. It's an official app. You can learn to play that way. It's very easy. You can build decks and whatnot. And I do that occasionally just to get a feel and keep in touch. But I don't go out and actively play the game. I'd like to. But it takes a lot of time. And yeah, growing up, I did not play the game. I think I played with my brother with some rules we made up, but I'm 99% a collector.
Yeah, what's interesting is the actual trading card game seems to be pretty popular too. Like there are tournaments going on still, and you'll see young people in these tournaments and winning and actually winning a lot of money, which is pretty wild. So is it only the cards that you collect, or do you collect other Pokemon merchandise?
I collect only the Pokemon cards, which is sheer willpower. I don't know how I've done it for this long. I have some of the video games that I've kept from growing up. Something that I want to do is buy all of the games. You can actually get the video games graded, which is a little extreme. I don't totally agree with, but I want them at the same time. I do just collect the cards, but if I won the lottery, it would expand far beyond that.
Yeah, the games were awesome. I remember the first Pokemon game I had was Pokemon Gold. And I feel like where I was, everybody had gold, nobody had silver. And I kind of wish I had would have gotten the silver game because then I could have traded the exclusive Pokemon. But it's really wild. Recently, I got myself a Nintendo Switch and I got one of the newest games just out of curiosity. I think it was Pokemon Sword and Shield. And the game has changed a lot, since I was a kid. Have you played any of the newer ones?
I'm quite out of touch with the new games. I do try and, watch some content on social media and YouTube and whatnot because I am a Pokemon fan, but I'm just having a hard time finding time for video games in general, let alone the new Pokemon games. So unfortunately, I don't play the new ones.
Yeah, same here. I'm curious, have you heard about this game called Pal World? It's like a
Yes.
Pokemon knockoff. Yeah, so one question is, it seems like a really blatant Pokemon knockoff. And has Nintendo said anything about this? Like, are they gonna sue or anything?
This is something I'm not totally up to date with, but I am a gamer and all my friends got Pal World. Fortunately, I just don't have the time to sink my teeth into it right now. It is on my list to play, but blatant knockoff is an interesting way to put it because that's how it felt to me at first. It was definitely part of their marketing strategy to say, hey, this is like Pokemon, but with guns and base building and a little more skewed toward adults. But now that it's come out and broke numerous records and sold millions of copies. We can now see that the game is a lot more than a knockoff. It's actually a very good game from what I understand. And it looks a lot more deep than the marketing led us to believe. I think the marketing was a really, really smart play that got a lot of attention, but I also don't feel like the marketing was truthful to what the game is. Because, like I said, it was like they were throwing Pokemon in our faces. Look at us. Nintendo's probably going to sue us. Look at this. But once you got into it, it looks like a great game. And it doesn't really look like a Pokemon knockoff to me anymore. Why hasn't Pokemon sued them into oblivion? That's a good question. I'm not sure if they have made a statement on this, but one of the reasons Pow World is so successful is because the company that makes the official Pokemon games, Game Freak, they have failed to innovate, and they've failed to modernize the Pokemon games to what the industry or what the consumer is asking for today. So the most recent Pokemon games that just came out are Scarlet and Violet. Again, I did not play them, but from what I understand, they were very bad. They were unoptimized, some would say unfinished. I've seen some screenshots and some videos that just make me shake my head, and I'm sad about it because I love Pokemon, but these games, they look bad, and they aren't offering the sort of things that other AAA good modern games are offering us. And Pow World seemed to fill that gap. It said, hey, here's a game kind of like Pokemon, but it's more modern. It's got base building and skills and combat. It's basically what people want the new Pokemon games to be. And so this is just my opinion, but I would imagine that the Pokemon company is kind of in hot water right now, and they might not have the best relationship with their consumers. And so I think shutting down Pow World might be a really bad move for them in terms of public relations.
I could see that. And yeah, you're right about how the Pokemon company, I think they're known as Game Freak. They haven't grown with their audience, which maybe that's why Pokemon is so enduring. But me as an adult, I would love a Pokemon game like that's kind of like an MMO, you know, where you could walk around in this 3D kind of space with good graphics and battle Pokemon. And I feel like that would make Nintendo billions upon billions of dollars if they did it right. And I keep kind of scratching my head. I'm like, why don't they do this? Maybe they know they can just put out a bare minimum product and make boatloads of money. So that's why they won't do it. My hope is maybe this Pow World will kind of like light a fire underneath Nintendo's ass and they'll get something good. You know, I mean, they're capable of doing it. Nintendo makes great games. You know, there's Legend of Zelda, Twilight, not Twilight Princess, the one that just came out. I can't think of the name, but they make great games. So, you know, what would you like to see in the future coming from Pokemon? Not just games, but, you know, cards or any other kind of avenues you would like to see them branch out into?
Well, let's start with the games. I mean, let's be honest. I want Pow World. I want Pow World made by Game Freak. I want a Pokemon game made for me, not made for my nieces and nephews.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they're going to do that. I don't know if I would give Pow World to a 7-year-old kid, you know, and that is their main consumer of the Pokemon game. So, you know, I'm not an expert. They are experts. They are the developers of their own games. I believe they do have something to figure out for the next game. So basically, I just want to see something just a little more polished, higher quality. Mm-hmm. Even if it doesn't appeal to me, I want to be proud of where the Pokemon video game franchise is today. And currently I'm not. So I'd like to see that moving forward. In terms of the trading cards, there is an issue when it comes to scarcity. Unfortunately, for those of us who are just here to collect the cards, it's become difficult because the hobby has become very monetized, especially with the popularity behind grading services. You may have heard about the Van Gogh collaboration with Pokemon earlier this year. There was a Van Gogh Pikachu card. It was a Pikachu Pokemon card done in a Vincent Van Gogh style illustration. Beautiful card. It's absolutely amazing. But the only way to get it was to be at the Van Gogh Museum in, I believe, Amsterdam. I can't remember exactly where it is, but it was a huge issue because we had people flying to that museum from the United States and Canada just for this promo card. And their staff was overrun. The entire event was just swarmed by people trying to get this card because they thought that this card was going to explode in value. And it was basically a get rich quick scheme. What happened was that the Pokemon company made us believe that the Van Gogh Pikachu card was going to be in very low supply. It's going to be very scarce. And so the fear of missing out drove a lot of people to, I can't believe this, but buy plane tickets to go to the museum just for the card. And this wild. It is wild. There's plenty of videos. If this is interesting anyone, there's plenty of videos on YouTube. You can go see footage of just hundreds of people scrambling through the front doors of this museum trying to get this Pikachu card. This isn't the first time this has happened, and it probably won't be the last. They tend to print cards and insinuate that this is your only chance to get the card. And it's really, I hate getting those emails from the Pokemon company because I'm just a collector. I'm not trying to get rich off of Pokemon cards. I'm not trying to grade it and resell it. I just want it to put in my binder. And knowing that they're doing this to create hype and to make money, and as a byproduct, collectors like me get left out, that really sucks. Now, there was a huge outcry from the fans, and they have sort of apologized. They've printed a lot more Pikachu cards, but we're scarred. A lot of us are upset as consumers that that happened. So in the future, I would like to see less of that. There are a lot of promo cards that are exclusive to Japan, which is a thing, which is all right. But then there's cards that are exclusive to GameStop, which is okay. And then there's cards that are exclusive to Best Buy, which we don't get here in Canada, which is frustrating. And then there's exclusives, at Toys R Us here in Canada that you don't get in the United States. And again, just for those of us who are just here to collect, it's not cool because then we have to go to the secondhand market. We have to go to eBay or something to get these cards. And just this past few months, there was a Pokemon Center exclusive promo for the Pokemon 151 set. The only way to get it was to order through the official website. Incredibly scarce. It's really nothing special of a card. And it's like still $100 on eBay.
Wow.
And it's frustrating for me. I just want to fill this empty slot in my binder. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really ready to dish out $100 USD, which is like, you know, 130, 140 Canadian.
Yeah.
So I think that's my main complaint.
That's wild. What's interesting is that you guys still have Toys R Us in Canada.
Yeah,
that's wild. Yeah, Toys R Us. I haven't heard that name in like maybe 5 or so years. They're totally kaputs down here. So if somebody wanted to start collecting Pokemon, where would they begin?
I would begin with just going out and buying a booster pack. I mean, if you haven't collected Pokemon cards before, that's where I would start if you have, because that seems to be a huge demographic here, is people who collected during the 1999 Pokemania, or maybe even during the 2016 Pokemania with a Pokemon Go release, but who are looking to return to the hobby once again. This hobby of Pokemon card collecting is huge. Like, it's unfathomable how many cards there are now and how many different niches there are within the cards. And it can be really, really easy to get distracted and go for wherever the hype is right now. So if you're returning to the hobby, or I suppose even if you're new to the hobby and you're looking to start a collection, I would say focus on one kind of card to collect. It's going to be much more rewarding, and your collection is going to turn out a lot more impressive if you focus on rainbow cards or gold cards, or maybe you just want to collect vintage cards from your childhood. Maybe you just want to collect the Japanese version of those vintage cards. So for anyone who's looking to start a Pokemon card collection, I would say choose a smaller niche of the cards to go into. Otherwise, you're going to get overwhelmed really fast.
Are there any like notable collectors in this field? Like, I know you mentioned Logan Paul, but are there like any kind of people who are known in this field as like being like the top collectors?
Yes, I don't really keep tabs on who the top collectors are, but a lot of these huge collectors, they have Instagram accounts or YouTube channels. You can go and check them out. They'll show you their collection. There's some dude on Instagram, I can't remember his name right now, but he calls himself the world's top Pokemon card collector. And it seems like he has every single card, which is really, really hard for me to wrap my head around. But to be a top collector, I mean, this is an expensive hobby when you get up to that level. It is really elite. And it's not something that I really keep tabs on. But if you look at the big PokeTubers, we got guys like PokeRev on YouTube. We got Leon Hart. We got Unlisted Leaf. These guys are known by basically every Pokemon card collector. They're super entertaining. They have huge collections. And they have some cards that simply nobody else has.
Yeah. I want to double back a bit and talk about Pokemon knockoffs. I remember growing up, there was a lot of stuff like there was Yu-Gi-Oh, which I don't know if it was a knockoff, but I would say it's maybe the second popular trading card game. And then there was something, Digimon. That one was a big one as well. Do you have any kind of experience like with these knockoffs? Did you get into any of those at all?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I collected both Yu-Gi-Oh and Digimon. And as an adult, I collect both Yu-Gi-Oh and Digimon.
Oh, yeah.
I love them. I love them both. But in terms of knockoffs, I don't think I would call either of those a Pokemon knockoff. Pokemon was really, it was created in the mid-90s in Japan. And it was a product of Japanese culture at that time. Like, monster movies, you know, like Godzilla stuff, Tamagotchi, stuff like that, all came together and heavily influenced Pokemon. And it's a common misunderstanding that Digimon followed Pokemon when really they were both developed around the same time. They're both a product of Japanese culture at that time. So while they seem very similar, I believe the creators of Digimon really credit Tamagotchi for their main inspiration. So it's interesting to see. We have Digimon, of course, and like Yu-Gi-Oh! Also very similar, also created around the same time. So it couldn't be called a knockoff. But then we have some animes that came a little bit later, like Beyblade or Metabots or like Monster Rancher, which are very Pokemon adjacent. I don't really know where I would draw the line between knockoff or just being a product of Japanese culture at that time.
I forgot all about Monster Rancher. I remember that. I think one thing about the Monster Rancher game is that it was on PlayStation and it had the unique ability. You could, while playing the game, take the disc out and put another, like a DVD or a CD-ROM in. And based on what you put in, it would give you like a monster based on like what you put into the PlayStation.
For real, that is cool.
Yeah, which I thought was kind of unique. I never had like PlayStation growing up, and but I was always interested in that unique aspect of it. And I will say this about Digimon, the anime was a lot better than the Pokemon anime. The
Oh, yeah.
Pokemon anime was pretty much one note. Like Ash and his friends would discover a new Pokemon, Team Rocket would show up. And they would battle, and then Team Rocket would somehow get into like an explosion and blast off into the sky, and then that was it. But kids loved it, you know. And it's, I guess if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know. Yeah, I'm trying to think, is there anything else? Like, you know, there was Digimon, Metabots, Yu-Gi-Oh, Monster Rancher, and I know there was something recently called Yo-Kai Watch.
Yeah, yes, I'm vaguely aware of that.
Yeah, but I don't think it kind of caught on as much as Pokemon.
Right.
Yeah, I wonder if there will ever be another kind of phenomenon like Pokemon going forward, you know?
It's hard to say. I look at like I'm not really in touch with like what kids are into today because I don't have kids, but my niece, for example, is really into Paw Patrol. And I know Paw Patrol is huge for kids, but
Yeah.
I don't see that depth to Paw Patrol that Pokemon offered, you know, and Paw Patrol's, you know, it's different, of course. It's kind of apples to oranges comparison here. But I don't see a lot of kid marketed video games or franchises that have the depth of Pokemon. And going back to what I said earlier, a franchise that doesn't insult you as a kid.
What did you think of the Pokemon Detective Pikachu movie?
Hey, sorry to interrupt, but are you looking to reach a dynamic and engaged audience of curious minds? Well, look no further. Bright Brains Podcast is the perfect platform to showcase your business or product. You'll be able to reach a diverse, intelligent audience and engage with listeners passionate about personal development, technology, and more. Elevate your brand through thought-provoking discussions. Don't miss this opportunity to promote your business on one of the fastest-growing podcasts in the market. Contact us today to discuss advertising options and elevate your brand to the next level. Contact us at brightbrainspod@gmail.com to secure your advertising spot on Bright Brains today. Again, that's Bright Brains with a Z, pod, P-O-D, @gmail.com. Now, back to the podcast.
I enjoyed it, but I disliked it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense. I thought it was just so cool to see Pokemon on the big screen. I was just over the moon delighted with the whole development. The fact that we finally got what kids like me have been asking for the last 25 years. But in terms of an actual film, I didn't really enjoy it. I don't think I'd watch it again,
Yeah,
but
same.
it was awesome. And I believe we have a confirmed sequel, which I'm 100% gonna go see. So.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like Nintendo, you'll ask for something. Like people have been asking for like a Pokemon live action movie, but then they give it to us. But it's not really about Pokemon battling, although there was some of that in there. But instead, we got about a guy who was trapped in a Pikachu's body solving a crime. I'm like, how did they come up with this? You
That caught me
know?
off guard for sure.
Yeah, but it doesn't compare to the original Pokemon movie. Pokemon, the first movie, that was a classic. You know, I might have to go back and rewatch that soon. But I remember going to theaters and seeing that. There's been a whole bunch of different Pokemon movies. Do you have any favorites?
I believe, since you brought it up, there are 23 Pokemon animated films.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they did remake the first movie, Mewtwo Strikes Back. Yeah, just a couple of years ago. It might have been in 2020. They redid it full, like, high-res CGI. It's really awesome. I'd recommend it.
Yeah, I got to check it out. All right, then. So you said that you've done original research within the hobby and you've written an ebook. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, so a lot of the work I do on SleeveNoCardBehind.com is simply gathering information and basically putting it into a readable, easy to understand format, which is sometimes a long or short blog post, like a written article. Sometimes it's a YouTube video. But sometimes you kind of come across a gap in information. And when I'm trying to put together some of this informative or educational content, you can't find something. And it's really frustrating no matter how many old forum posts you scroll through. I've over time accumulated over a gigabyte of old Japanese magazine scans. Like just so much old Japanese stuff from the 90s. And I'll sift through this. I'll spend hours sifting through these scans using Google Translate, trying to pull apart or get little hints or tidbits at information that we're missing. So Pokemon was huge in 1999 in North America, but it was a little bit different in Japan. The video games didn't do so well when they came out initially, which is hard to believe, really. Mm-hmm. But it did take a little bit of marketing and a little bit of time for Pokemon to pick up. So a lot of the early releases from the franchise don't have a lot of documentation around them in terms of like marketing, for example. So outside of the official Pokemon cards, the Pokemon trading card game, we have Pokemon cards that were also produced by the candy company Top Sun Confectionery or the toy company Bandai. And so, like I said, since this wasn't a big thing, like Top Sun cards, for example, there's a lot of mystery surrounding these old Japanese Pokemon cards because they were just produced by a candy company and they were sold with bubble gum. It's not like they even had a big budget for advertising, and there's no exact release date for these cards because I believe no one cared back then. So, and that goes with the old Bandai cards from 96 as well. There's still a lot of mystery surrounding these cards or even the early TCG cards. There's some errors or some misprints that people are hunting for. And like I said, there's sort of phantom cards that we think exist but we haven't really seen, and I've been able to extract a little bit of that information from these old Japanese magazines, and I'm probably not the first to do it, but it is hours and hours of using Google Translate and learning Japanese just to forget it in the morning. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I've done a lot of work there. I'm really trying to make something for the hobby, for people like me who are just, they go down the rabbit hole and they want information like how many copies of this card were produced at what event in Tokyo were they available at, you know, how did you get one of these? So when I find something like that, I pull it out. I don't keep it for myself. I try and make it public information so people can go and find that. The ebook I wrote is not related to this in any way. In fact, everything I put in that ebook, you can find entirely for free elsewhere. It is titled How to Appraise Your Pokemon Card Collection and Sell for Maximum Profit. So the idea occurred to me one day that I may suddenly pass. And my wife, who knows nothing about Pokemon cards, is going to be left with this massive collection. And it's going to be really, really hard for her to get her money's worth out of these cards. And this happens. I had someone reach out to me last year. They said that their husband suddenly passed, the exact situation I just described. And they're left with this huge Pokemon card collection. And she knew nothing at all about Pokemon cards. And she said, I think I'm just going to give it to someone or just throw it up on eBay for whatever. And so I ended up going through the collection with her, card by card. It took me an entire weekend. We cataloged everything. I pulled up today's market value on every card, and the collection came out to a very healthy five figures. Like, oh, wow. It was no joke. This guy really did care a lot about his cards. He kept them very well. And I thought, you know, I can't do this for everyone. So the ebook I wrote is really just my process. It's, you know, if someone's in that situation, they should be able to grab my ebook and walk themselves through it and be able to get some money for their cards, you know, instead of giving it to a friend, because we all have different financial situations and you might need that money, you know. And for anyone who is listening, the ebook is available on sleevenocardbehind.com. I charge $10 for it. If you don't want to pay $10 for it, shoot me an email. I'll just give it to you. That's totally fine.
The woman you helped, did you like actually video conference with her, or you actually went to her location?
We never had a video chat. We communicated through text. She recorded some videos of like flipping through the cards. I'd message her back. I'd say, hey, when you have some time, go ahead and pull these ones out, send me some high-res images, so on and so forth. Understandably, she was very busy at the time planning a funeral and arrangements like that. So I just let her do things at her pace.
Hey, that's really awesome that you did that, man. That's really cool. So you mentioned that your collection is massive. How many cars do you think you own? Do you know the figure exactly? Or
I don't. I don't know if I'll ever know that number. I have lots and lots of binders that are full to the top. I have a few boxes that are literally jam-packed, like packed full of cards.
Hey, that's awesome, man. Hey, I'm really glad I was able to talk to you today and, you know, get to know you and your passion. It sounds like an awesome hobby. So let me ask you this, man, before I let you go. Do you have anything to promote? I know you have your website and YouTube channel. Just let the people know again where they can go to find you.
Sleeve No Card Behind. You can visit sleevenocardbehind.com or the YouTube channel, or find me on social media anywhere at Sleeve No Card Behind.
All right. And one last question, man. What's next for you and this brand you have, Leave No Card Behind? Where do you want to take it eventually?
Right now, my main focus is on the YouTube channel. I'm trying to build an educational resource. There's lots and lots of fantastic YouTube channels about Pokemon cards that are more on the entertainment side of things, which are absolutely amazing and intimidating, to be frank. I'm trying to build an educational channel, and I think there's a need for that. So if you're a new collector, or if you're getting back into the hobby, or introducing this to your kids for the first time, or maybe your kids are introducing this to you for the first time, I'm trying to build a channel where you can go ahead and type a question into YouTube or Google, and hopefully my video comes up and is informative and can help you out.
Hey, that's awesome, man. Well, hey, thanks again for sitting down with me and chatting. I appreciate it. And everybody listening right now, go check out Sleeve No Card Behind. Take care, man.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it.
Hey, no problem.
All right, that's a wrap. Thank you for joining us for another enlightening conversation here on Bright Brains. I hope you've gained valuable insights and inspiration to fuel your own bright ideas. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to like and subscribe
rate and leave a review on your favorite podcast platform or however else you listen to this podcast. Also, we can be found on all major social media. Just type in Bright Brains with a Z. And remember, the brightest minds are those that never stop seeking knowledge.